Welcome to Predictable with Stu. I, of course, am Stu. It would be very weird if I was not, because that would not be a good title for a show. But that's the name of it, Predictable with Stu. I want to tell you, by the way, if you happen to be here, this is being posted on what used to be the Stu Does America account. If you happen to be a listener, a viewer of Stu Does America, and you're like, hey, prediction markets, that kind of sounds cool, but like, are you going to do a show kind of like Stu Does America as well? Well, yeah, we're kind of doing that right now over at Stu and Dave Do America. We added Dave Landau to the show, if you haven't heard. So just wherever you are, search for Stu and Dave Do America. That show is out there and ready for you to consume. Very funny show. I think you'll like it quite a bit. BlazeTV.com/Stu and Dave, by the way. Stu and Dave is the code for 20% off. You can go there as well. And all the socials are Stu and Dave Do America. This show is a little bit different than that one in that we're talking about prediction markets and how... Really, we're talking about the news through the lens of prediction markets. We want the world to be a little bit more predictable for you, and that's what we're doing here. And, you know, we're kind of still at the beginning of this. It's kind of like a live stream at this point. Our studio, I was just sitting in it moments ago. It's almost ready. It's going to be ready next week. So that's going to be exciting. Once we're in there, we'll have all the bells and whistles of a normal show. We've got the graphics, and we've got the videos. We got guests. We had all the fun stuff that's coming very, very soon. But I wanted to be able to be here to talk to you about prediction markets and, you know, the big news that's happening and how we can kind of give you a little preview of how we're going to look at this through that lens of prediction markets. Coming up today, we have our prediction markets gambling. Well, actually, that's questions being asked all the time. We'll talk about that. We've got the Democrats' top Senate recruit dropping out of the race. Kind of a big story when it comes to the Senate. But we're going to start with gas prices. And if you happen to own a giant evil SUV, you know what gas prices are like right now. We have a giant evil SUV at my home. And each time my wife goes to fill up the SUV, we do remortgage the house, and the rates are just going north. Everyone knows this is happening. It's very, very expensive. And it is the type of thing that can wipe out your budget. You know, if you happen to be a person who's living paycheck to paycheck or even close to it, and then you got to deal with this massive increase in what your fuel costs, it's a real problem. It's a real problem for the election going forward, and it's a real problem for everyday families. And we are going the wrong direction. 4-year high is where we are with oil prices. Oil hitting a wartime high of over $120 a barrel as the standoff shows no end in sight, says the New York Times. The longer the disruption to the Middle East fuel supply lasts, the risk grows that higher energy costs will feed into broader inflation that could dent economic growth. You know, so far we've been pretty resilient economically. A lot of that has to do with growth in the AI sector right now. It's kind of like everyone is very excited about that. They're pouring money into that field, and it's sort of carrying the rest of the economy a little bit. We've talked about that in the past on Stu Does America, actually, about how much of the gains in the stock market and the economy in general are coming from this one sector. And if that, there's any problems there, we could be seeing real problems. But the price of gas is going really, really high. I have mentioned this on the air before. About, 6 months ago or so, coincidentally, I wound up leasing a Tesla, mainly because I was curious as to whether I would like it or hate it. I had a gas-powered car, and I was like, well, it could be interesting to have this as a kind of an alternate to our giant SUV, right? You kind of have both things covered. And I wanted to see if I would like it or not, or if I would just think it was the most annoying thing in the world to drive. Long story short, it was a bit of a bear to actually get the transaction done. It was kind of a strange process and was a little weird. We talked about that earlier. Eventually, Tesla kind of came through and got me through this process and smoothed all that out, we'll say. And so I got the car, and actually, it's a pretty enjoyable experience. I've talked to, this is off the topic of prediction markets, obviously, but I was talking to a friend who had a Tesla and was living in like an apartment or condo complex. And that was a much more difficult thing to do. If you don't have at least the slightly advanced way to charge your car at your house, I could see it being really annoying to own an electric car or a Tesla or anything else. Because, you know, if you're going out to the charging stations all the time, it is faster than you think it is. It's not like you're sitting there for 45 minutes to go anywhere. You know, you get there, you sit there for 10 minutes, you get more than a half a tank, if you will, half a tank. So you can get loaded up that way. But, you know, when you have it at your house, you leave your home every day. Think of this if you drive a gas-powered car. Picture yourself leaving your home every day with a completely full tank. That's what it feels like. So unless you're driving a really far distance, that whole range anxiety thing you've heard a lot about, honestly, I don't feel it at all. I feel it more with my gas-powered car because I often come back to my house with a quarter of a tank of gas, and I got to figure out where when I'm leaving, where am I going to go get gas? Now, there are gas stations everywhere. It's not a big, I wouldn't say it's anxiety, but you're thinking about it. I don't even think about it with the Tesla. You leave the house and you're at, you know, 200 and I think my car is like, you can charge it more than this, but they tell you to go to like 80% or whatever. It's like 220 miles. I very rarely drive that in a day. You know, I'm around town. I'll sometimes get it down to 50 miles left, but rarely do I go more than that. So honestly, pretty easy experience. It's sort of an aside here. What's important about that to me right now is it's a lot cheaper to drive. I mean, it's cheaper to drive when gas prices are normal. It's a lot cheaper to drive when prices look like they do right now. And so, you know, there is, I think, a little bit of an uptick in people looking at these cars again. Whenever gas prices soar, people are like, well, I was thinking about trying a Tesla. Maybe this is a good time for that. So it's something to consider. I will say this just to, and this is the last part I'll say before we go on to what I'm actually trying to talk about here. If you're looking at this, there's, I know, a lease program in California and Texas. It's pretty inexpensive. I mean, I'm paying like $300 a month for my Tesla, you know, and it's a performance model, and it's like, you know, 0 to 60 and faster than the, you know, the car that I have that, you know, costs a lot more than that, with a giant horsepower and a massive engine and all that fun stuff. Again, you know, it's a different driving experience. It's not as fun to drive as, you know, the fun high powered car, but it is really fast. It'll drive itself, which is pretty cool. And for around $300 a month, the used market for electric cars is really, really good. People don't want to buy used electric cars. Mine's a 2022. So anyway, that's just another story. Okay. So if you are sitting here sweating about the price of gasoline, what is it? Right now, the average price of gas as of today is $4.30 a gallon. This little fancy chart will tell that story. Now, you see it going a little bit higher back in the Biden days of 2022, a very dark era for our economy. It is spiking back toward those rates, though still considerably less than where it peaked at about $5 per gallon during the Biden era. But it is going the wrong direction and going that way fast, and it doesn't seem like we're right around the corner for a solution when it comes to the Middle East and the Strait of Hormuz and all the things that we talk about when it comes to the Iranian conflict. I don't know what the plan is there. We were told it was going to be 3 or 4 weeks. We're now at 6 weeks, 7 weeks. It does seem, and this was our concern at the very beginning of this, and we talked about it at the time, these things tend to not go to plan, and it's very difficult to unwind them. Even when you want to, if you have a say, well, we'll do this and then we'll end the war. Well, unfortunately, Iran has a say in that. And if they want to keep firing at us all the time, by the way, they're still firing at ships in the Strait of Hormuz. They are closing it down. They have not said they're going to stop doing the nuclear development that we want them to stop. So it's difficult to unwind these situations when you get them started, which is really my concern over it. I have no concern over whether the Iranian regime lasts more than, you know, a second longer. They're terrible. And I understand, and I'm happy at some of the results we've got from this, but this is the risk. This is the risk, and it is a big one. $120 a barrel is pretty high. It's not at the highest we've ever seen, but it's pretty high. $4.30 a gallon, as I mentioned, up 27 cents in just a week. And part of this is, it's not like the war makes it spike on speculation, right? The bombings start, the missiles start firing, and people who are speculating what oil will become start getting into those markets, driving the price up. It's the actual supply takes a while to work itself through the system. And what we're seeing now is a shortage in supply that is beginning to build. We're generally okay from that. We're shielded from it as far as the mechanical access to this fuel. But it is a global market, and that is what we're seeing here. Other places that are dependent more on, let's say, Iranian oil are having to go to other places. They're buying different oil, and that's driving the price up of the oil that's available. So that's where it is. Now, let me give you the prediction market insight here, because what we have, what's interesting about prediction markets, and just to kind of give you a little bit of the mechanics behind how this happens, just like you're able to predict the price of oil going forward on, you know, the futures exchanges and, you know, options and the stock market, you can do the same thing on prediction markets. In my mind, it's a better way to do it because it's more direct, it's more understandable, it's more accessible to you and I. For a very long time, I don't know if I've ever even talked about this, but for a very long time, I have hedged my own gas price, my own budget for gas, because we have two gas guzzlers. Now we only have one, but we had two gas guzzlers for a long time. I would look at the price of gas and say, okay, it's at, you know, let's say $3 a gallon. If it goes to $4 a gallon, it's going to cost me an extra, you know, I don't know, several hundred dollars a month, whatever it is. I don't know. It's been a while since I've done this math. And then what I would do is I would take a little money and I would invest in an account, a fund that reflected the price of oil. So if the oil price went up, yeah, it would cost me at the pump, but it would pay me back with the investment I made into oil futures, right? So I would hedge that. So if it was going to cost me an extra $100 a month, you know, I would invest a little bit that in a potential spike, and then if it did spike, I would be able to get that money back and pay myself back for the gas price increase. Doing things like that will make your financial life better. They're not always easy to find. I'm a big believer in hedging your life when you can, because, you know, weird things happen. Black swans swim by. And when you have those situations going on, it's nice to know that, hey, you don't have to worry about it that much. I've talked about this with cryptocurrency as well. You know, I had, you know, unfortunately not enough money in Bitcoin for a while, but I do have a little bit. And when I look at that, I was like, well, if you want to hedge that, there are ways to do that through prediction markets that are really, really beneficial. We'll get into that maybe as we go forward. If you happen to be someone who's invested in that, there are ways to say, hey, if the price tanks, I'm going to lose money on my investment, but I can get paid off on the prediction markets to hedge that. It's a little bit, it's like almost like an insurance policy, a little bit upfront that you can hedge an investment loss, or the opposite of that as well, a big investment gain. You can actually pay yourself if you don't get that gain. Sometimes these things get complicated. Maybe this isn't prediction market 101. Maybe it's in 201 or 301, a more advanced course. But we'll get into that as well. My point here, though, is that you could do that on prediction markets now very, very easily. Let me give you a couple of scenarios here. How high will oil get by the end of the year? There are a bunch of different measures of oil. The prices are a little bit different. But this one is the WTI measure. Doesn't really matter the details of that. But there are a bunch of markets that basically will give you a yes or no. Will it get higher than this price by the end of the year? So, for example, will it get over $115 a barrel? That's a 71% chance. Will it get over $150 a barrel? This would be catastrophic, really high prices for your gas. There's a 35% chance that will happen on the prediction markets. This one I'm looking at is Kalshi. Will it get over $200 a barrel? 16% chance. Now, $200 a barrel, I don't even know what the world looks like, honestly. If we're over $200 a barrel, this is real panic time. There's a 16% chance of really catastrophic outcomes. So what these markets can do, and it's really helpful, if you want to invest, that's a really interesting way to look at it. Like, for example, you can very cheaply get contracts that will, $200 a barrel, and hedge your risk of a catastrophic outcome, because it's probably going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars in gas prices if it gets up that high. What you can do is you can go on to Kalshi and say, I'll take some contracts of yes at 16 cents on the dollar. So you buy at 16 cents. If you are correct and it goes over $200 a barrel, you would get a dollar for every 16 cents that you invest. You know, you're talking about 4 or 5 times your money there, right? So for a little price, you can hedge that risk and maybe do really, really well. So all these people are in all these various markets at all these various prices. And what Kalshi does, what Polymarket can do, what a lot of these prediction markets can do, is synthesize that data, where people are putting their money on all these different contracts, and give you an overall prediction of where people think prices will go this year. That's what this graph is. How high will oil get by the end of the year? The prediction is about $132.17 as of when we came up with this graph. So you could see the movement here. At times, people have been more nervous about it. It's not super high right now. The markets are kind of looking at this and giving a little bit of a shoulder shrug when it comes to this particular price of oil. Again, this is Texas. It's a little bit different than maybe the overall price. But generally speaking, what they're saying is it's going to go higher than it is right now, but not that much higher by the end of the year. That's what that data tells you. Let me give you another version of this that's going to be a little bit more understandable, a little bit easier to kind of price in, because these prices are prices that hit you every day. If you're not an oil trader, you don't care what the oil prices are per se. What you care about is the after effects of that, which are your gas prices. Again, one of the things I love about prediction markets and what's great about them is how much more accessible they are to you, to me, to the average person than traditional investments are. It was sort of hard, honestly, the way I was doing it before. I would buy, DBO is one of them where you would buy, it's basically based on the price of oil. And so when the price of oil would go up, my investment would go up, I would gain some money, and it would offset what I'm paying at the pump. So I wouldn't have to deal with higher gas prices. I made it so they never affected me. I was able to offset them. But it was hard to honestly calculate how to do that. It was a difficult sort of world. You can do it. Not really accessible to the average person. Prediction markets are way better at this. Way better at this. Let me give you this example. Gas prices is another one you can do. Not oil prices, not some investment in oil market futures, but just what will gas prices get to? What's going to be the highest they get to, right? We're seeing now they're $4.30 a gallon on average. If you're worried about gas prices going up, you can hedge your life here. You can go into these markets right now. They are saying a $5.40 a gallon, there's a 59% chance our average prices get there. Think about that world. $5.40 a gallon average. There's a 59% chance we hit that. There's a 41% chance that we hit $5.60 a gallon. 36% chance that we hit $5.80 a gallon. $6, it's 34% that we hit there. And the absolute catastrophic scenario, the highest one they have on there, is $7 a gallon or more. Think about a country where your average gallon of gas is $7. I can paint that picture for you. It is economic catastrophe for a lot of people. And you want to talk about catastrophe, November comes for Republicans and that thing is over $7 a gallon. We're talking about House gone, Senate gone, maybe 55, 56 seats for the Democrats in the Senate. This is catastrophic levels. There's a 12% chance of that happening. But on the other hand, if you go in there and you say, will it hit $7 a gallon? You say yes. You can hedge your risk on that personally, getting an insurance contract essentially at 12 cents on the dollar. And if it hits $7, and it only has to hit it briefly, if you look at the rules, it's like this is basically what's the peak price. So you might not be paying $7 a gallon for months and months and months and months, but if it hits that $7, you get paid on that contract, and you're talking about, 8 to 10 times your money, depending on where you buy. So that can offset all of your gas prices. These are incredibly useful for average everyday people. They're not easy to use. We will talk you through how to use these, in prediction markets. It's not easy for people to conceptualize because it's just not the way they've run their life. But this is very easy to actually access. Another easy access point for this is the fact that Kalshi or Poly Market will take this data. They will take all these different positions on these markets, on gas prices, and they will synthesize them into one number so we can also get the information. So you're saying, oh, look, I don't want to get into this. I don't want to hedge my life. Shut up, you loser. What is hedging your life, you moron? If that's you, as you scream at me through the television set or the podcast speaker, that's fine. You don't have to have any interest in this at all. You could say, I'm not gonna invest in that. I don't care about any of that. That's fine. What all this does is it gives us data that's better data than you can get anywhere else. And what Kalshi is saying right now, what do people actually think gas prices will get to? This is going to be a scary number. I want to prepare you for that. These prediction markets believe gas prices will get to, look at this chart, $5.50 a gallon this year. Now, that's actually not the highest prediction that has happened. When the war was starting, it was a little bit higher. It was around $6 a gallon. But you see it inching up. People do not see the end of this war as a likely outcome. And they see $5.50 a gallon as a possibility of where gas prices will hit. This, again, even at $5.50, If that's certainly present in November, there are massive problems. This is why you see the Senate at a 50-50 proposal. People are thinking, you know, if you see $5.50 a gallon, likely the Senate is very much in play. You know, when I said yesterday that I think the Senate is a little bit, I think the Democrats are a little bit optimistic. The markets are a little bit optimistic for the Democrats when it comes to the Senate at about a 50-50 pitch. I think that's true. I think that it's probably more like 60-40, maybe even 65-35 for Republicans to hold. But first of all, that's a big risk, right? Like 35-40% is a big, big risk for Republicans in a year that they should definitely win. But secondarily, this is what they're pricing in. If the economy looks like this, Republicans are going to lose the House. They're probably going to lose the Senate if the economy looks like 550 gas. So that's where we are with that. We will get into more of the strategy on how you, as your own family member, can kind of hedge your life, can protect your family from these high prices. You can do that with prediction markets. Again, is it gambling? We'll get into that later. But does that feel like gambling? When you're taking out the risk of high gas prices, is that gambling? You can do that very easily with these markets. It was hard to do before they existed, but now it's easy to do. We'll walk you through that in the coming weeks as we get into kind of more advanced stuff. But I wanted to walk you through, as these prices are spiking, a bit of an understanding of what the information is, what people are looking at going forward, and a little bit on how you can protect yourself as well. Okay, it's predictableshow.com. I'll put up a piece about this, I think, at some point as we get a little bit farther along to make sure you understand that. So it's kind of in written form, is not just me talking through that, because I think this is an important one for you, for your family. And for the country, honestly, economically, we don't have to put up with this stuff anymore. We always have. This is the first time we didn't have to put up with high gas prices. You don't have to deal with them anymore. That's the world you're living in right now because of prediction markets. It's a kind of an exciting time to be alive. Predictableshow.com. Go there. Subscribe. We'll give you tips like this. We'll get you through this stuff as we go forward. We'll let you use these markets and walk you through how to get through all of this in the coming weeks and months. And, of course, give you all the best election coverage as well. All right. Predictableshow.com. We'll be back in a second. Welcome back to Predictable. I want to talk to you a little bit about the elections. We had a major development in a key race in the Senate. This is a situation where the Democrats just really had their own situation spiral out of their control. Let me walk you back to the beginning of this. Maine is a state where Democrats have been very frustrated for a long time. They felt as if they should be able to hold the state. It's basically a blue state. It's, you know, there are areas of it that are red. It's not entirely a blue state. They calculate their electoral votes differently, so that makes it more complicated. But also, there's a bit of purple in there. I have friends who are from the Northeast, and they're always like, well, Maine's not Massachusetts. They're different. And that's true. They can elect Republicans and have, even as governor. When you look at Maine, I use Maine often as an example of why I don't like someone like John Cornyn for a Republican in Texas. John Cornyn, you know, look, is just squishy on a lot of issues that are important to conservative voters. And when you're in Texas and you have a red state, you should be able to do better than a John Cornyn as your representative. If John Cornyn were the senator in Maine, I'd be pretty thrilled. You know, he still wouldn't be my favorite guy in the world, just like Susan Collins isn't my favorite lady in the world. She does not have a lot of the policy proposals and priorities that I have. But she's kind of the best that we can do in Maine in a lot of ways. That's not entirely accurate, but it's close to accurate. It's not entirely true, but it's truthy. It's right about there because, yeah, you could get lucky. You could find a really dynamic person that's more conservative that could win there. But it's hard. Susan Collins, the independent streak that she has, the fact that she goes left a decent amount, helps her in that state. She's a good fit for a Republican in that state, and that's why she keeps winning. And they keep challenging her, and she keeps winning, and it doesn't make any sense to the people on the left. Like, how are we losing Maine? Well, you're losing Maine because, I mean, even their Democrat, Angus King, who is their Democratic senator, who's not actually a Democrat. He's technically an independent that caucuses with Democrats because it actually helps him to say he's an independent and not a Democrat there. So anyway, Collins has been difficult for Democrats to beat. they needed to get someone really popular, someone who was, you know, had a good approval rating, who was, you know, a well-known name to try to take out Susan Collins politically in Maine. That they found their person. They decided to go find out and recruit really, really hard. And they decided to go that direction and go after the governor of the state, who had a great, by the way, approval rating. Janet Mills is her name. Janet Mills had a good approval rating. She had won elections statewide. She was a popular Democrat. The problem here lies with an issue of a certain Nazi-tattooed gentleman named Graham Plattner. I'm going a little bit out of order here, guys, so you can follow me on this. But Janet Mills is now, they got Janet Mills to agree to run. Now, this is supposed to be her race. It was supposed to be a handout, right? This is supposed to be the easiest thing in the entire universe to get to. And because once she won, she would win the primary easily, and then she would really give Susan Collins a tough battle in the general. That was the plan. They got her to say yes to this. They got her in the race. They flooded her with money. And she, you know, was sitting here going against Graham Plattner, who's like a former military guy who said all sorts of crazy things, communist things, socialist things. He's on record with all sorts of really bad negatives. And he kind of had a Nazi tattoo. Usually the type of thing that's disqualifying for a candidate. Instead, in today's modern Democratic Party, it certainly seems to have made Graham Plattner a little bit more popular, to the extent that she has been defeated in this primary so badly in poll after poll after poll after poll, she's now dropping out. This just happened today. Janet Mills bowing out of the Maine Senate race as insurgent Democrat rises. The insurgent Democrat, of course, being one Graham Plattner. In poll after poll after poll after poll after poll, no matter how much money she has, no matter how many ads she runs, she has not been able to dig into the lead that this Nazi has. And we're talking about 30-point type leads. Now, he would say he's not a Nazi, by the way. So I guess I would say alleged Nazi. But, you know, if I was going to get a tattoo, I don't have any, by the way. My dad had a tattoo. It was a tattoo of a heart on his arm. It had, I think, an arrow maybe through it or something. And it had my mom's name, Anne, through it. And I remember looking at it throughout my entire childhood. It became a little awkward after they got divorced. And it became even more awkward after he got remarried to someone else with a different name. Unfortunately, he didn't look for someone named Anne. Wound up picking someone else with a different name. And that was not the easiest situation. Eventually, he did, by the way, get it lasered off. I can't remember. You know, honestly, I can't remember if he got it lasered off completely or he put the new name in. I want to say I think he just got the name removed and just turned it into, well, I'm not going to try this again. Let's not put more letters on me. Anyway, long story short, if I was going to get a tattoo, I'd be pretty sure it was something I really believed in, something I was pretty loyal to, right? Like, you know, I don't know, maybe it'd be the Philadelphia Eagles, right? If I was going to pick one thing to get a tattoo for, I guess I could put my wife's name on there. I wouldn't feel, just so you know, honey, wouldn't feel the lack of confidence because of my dad's situation. I would feel pretty confident that it would be okay. But still, it's just a weird thing. I'm not a tattoo guy anyway, but it's just a weird thing to do for something you're not really sold on. Like, it's not a third date thing, right? You don't put a Nazi tattoo on your body after the second meeting. Like, you got to go pretty far or at least be really dumb. He said he was basically really drunk and didn't realize it was a Nazi tattoo. Do you believe that? Apparently, the voters of Maine do. Either that or there's a large Nazi contingency here. And you see what happens here in this graph, by the way. And I say this often. Prediction markets predict the future better. And I want to explain that at some point. They don't actually predict the future. That's not exactly what they're doing. It's a bit of nuance in that. Maybe I'll explain that later. I don't have time to do it today. But anyway, the results of their predictions are often much more accurate than anywhere else than you're going to get. Better than polling, better than prognosticators, certainly better than pundits. But they don't hit everything. And that's, by the way, good. You want that to be the case. Why? Because I want you paying for vacations. I want you to have vacations paid for by prediction markets. I want you to go to a nice steakhouse and order all the sides that you want and get the fancy drink sampler thing that they have on the top of the menu. I want them to bring over that to you, and I want you to pay with some profits that you're making off of these markets. And if they're all perfect, then you're not going to make money. What we're looking for are times when we think that they are mispriced. And this is an example of one that was. I'm actually somewhat surprised at this. I didn't have money in this market, but I was surprised by Will Janet Mills drop out of the main Senate Democratic primary this month. It was only down to about 10% a few days ago. This was not something that was seen, that people saw coming, and it wound up now. This is showing at 95.8%. In reality, it's now at, I think, 99% because... Why? I mean, quite clearly, she's out. She's announced it, and so she's out. So, end of the day, if you called that, you had 10x your money in a couple of days. If not, I would not have put money in this market. But if I did, I might have thought, I don't think she's going to drop out. She's got so much money and all this Democratic attention. Well, now it's going to be Susan Collins versus the Nazi tattoo. That's where we are in that race. A much better situation and improving percentage. Like, if you're going to adjust this on the entire Senate, you'd say this is a good thing for Republicans, by the way. Okay. I'm going too long today. Let me take a quick break, come back on the other side, and give you a little bit about redistricting. There's more news on that because you knew the Democrats weren't just going to sit here and say, okay, you guys want 12 more seats? Fine. They have a response to how to do this. We'll tell you about that in a minute. Okay. Predictable show. Go there. Take your email. Put it in the fancy box. You'll get updates on prediction markets where there's value opportunities. You'll get information on the election breakdowns. You'll get behind the scenes. You'll get live video. You'll get all sorts of things. It's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. Check it out, predictableshow.com. And we're at Predictable Show on all the social media now, too. So if you subscribe to my normal account, do that, too. You'll get clips. You'll get all the other stuff. Okay. The Supreme Court case that could hand the House to Republicans. This is an article written by Nate Cohn. It's pretty good. I like Nate. This is from October of 2025, previewing the Supreme Court case that was resolved yesterday. And this is sort of like the warning to Democrats, hey, this is a big deal. You should know about this. And it is basically the kind of source for the map that has been going viral since that case came down. By the way, I believe properly decided. We didn't go into the merits of the case all that much yesterday, just kind of to explain what it means, but I think it was the correct decision. Samuel Alito wrote it. When Samuel Alito writes it, you can pretty much bet it's the right way, at least as far as our constitutional system is supposed to operate. Whole nother story. So here's the picture of what that looks like. What you see basically here, if you're listening on podcast, the southeast of the United States, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, North and South Carolina, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana. You see a bunch of blue districts. Those largely are majority minority districts, meaning like for Louisiana, it's mostly black voters in the districts that they've drawn. They've drawn them in these crazy ways because what they believed was the Voting Rights Act required them to do so. We have to have some black represented districts. What actually the Voting Rights Act says, you can use race as a factor, one of the factors, a piece of the puzzle, a little dash of this in the recipe, but you can't just make these decisions on racial lines. Then you're just picking how people vote based on the color of their skin, which I don't know if you know this, seems like a bad idea. Okay. For a very long time, African Americans were on the wrong side of that decision-making process. People, if you want to believe the best in them, they believe that they could solve this by going the opposite direction. What kind of wound up burning the left is they tried to do all these black districts with African-American representation, and now that's the reason it was overturned. With all this redistricting going on, what we could do in theory on the Republican side, if we're Republicans, we can say, hey, we can turn all that blue into mostly red. That picture right there you're looking at, about a 12-seat increase for Republicans. Now, Republicans may or may not go for that. My guess is they will. This is a very difficult year for Republicans, so trying to get the max seats possible is something that they will do. Again, the Supreme Court has told them they can't have districts drawn this way. They can find other ways to draw districts that would give you similar results, or they can go, balls to the wall, basically, and say, hey, we want to get rid of these districts. If you see the way California has been acting lately, if you see the way Virginia acted, overwhelming their own laws and constitution to try to put this stuff in place, you can guess as to what Republicans are going to do. They're probably going to go for the 12 seats. My guess is they don't get all 12. My guess is, and this is the problem when you redistrict, you weaken otherwise strong areas. So that can be a problem. You could lose seats doing this as well. So they may not go all the way because they're worried about that. And I think rightly so to be worried about it. This is not a great year for Republicans. I don't expect it to be a good election for Republicans. If you try to bend these districts too much to gain extra ground, you might wind up losing ground. Now, Republicans, of course, are still going to do this to some degree. I think my guess is they maybe get 6 seats out of this, right, instead of 12, something like that, 6 or 7. That is probably where we will be. It's interesting because the Democrats are now saying what we will do to respond to this is go to our more left-wing states and actually weaken some of those blue districts that are looking for African-American representation. They no longer have to be majority-minority districts. So take some of these minority voters that normally vote Democrat and spread them around to closer districts so that can lean those districts back to the Democrats instead of being purple or blue. They are going to fight back. What typically happens in these situations, and honestly, this is not unprecedented, but somewhat rare in recent memory, what typically is going to happen is both sides are going to punch themselves out, and you will get a situation where roughly things wind up winding out equal with a few seats one way or another. That's kind of the typical way I expect it to go. It seems to me that Republicans might be able to get a couple seats out of this, but I mean, you look at the markets, we talked about this yesterday, they don't think it's going to be enough for Republicans to continue to own the House. They're at about 83% chance to lose it right now, down from about an 85% chance. So a little bit of degradation there, but not much. That's where that is. Now, there just to one other thing on the markets, if you're interested in this, because I think this is there's a couple opportunities here. Which states will redistrict before the midterms? Right now, I'll give you a few of these, and you can show this chart if you want to. You can see a couple of the states, Missouri, Virginia, and Alabama. You'll notice the most important part of this, most interesting part of this chart is the orange line for Alabama, which you see it basically zero the entire time, no plans of doing this. Now it's spiked up to about 30% because of the Supreme Court ruling. The other states are, you know, they've been bouncing up and down, but they've been talking about potentially redistricting. Missouri's been kind of the next step for Republicans after they did some stuff in Texas, and they're trying Florida as well now. Those states are up there. Let me give you a couple of the individual ones that I do think there are some opportunities on. Louisiana and Florida are up at 80 and 81% right now. Those are, I mean, very likely to redistrict if they can pull it off. There's not a lot of time before this election. Florida's already going for it. They're basically saying they're going to do it. The risk there is that the courts may block it. We will see. Louisiana, the courts just told them they kind of have to do this, right? So that will likely be a one-seat pickup for Republicans in Louisiana, going from like a 4-2 situation in the state for favoring Republicans to a 5-1. So that is going on as well. Virginia is another interesting one. They're at 68%. You'll notice it's lower than these other states. Why? Well, Virginia's process here, I won't get into the details, but the process here was, I would say, more questionable than these other states. And the markets are pricing that in a little bit. To me, there's some opportunity in going no on Virginia, despite the fact they actually passed this in their election recently. We talked quite a bit about that election, but the way they went about it, I think there's a good chance the courts overrule it, which would be interesting. And right now, if you go no on that, you are basically investing 32 cents to win 68 cents. Okay. So basically you're talking about 200% type profits here. It's more of a long shot, but that's a really fun one if you hit it. Going no on Virginia is something, I don't know, I might put a few dollars into just because I'm interested enough in it. I'm not sure about that case. I think I really honestly need to do a little bit more understanding on it, maybe do some deeper reading on people who have really dissected it to see if you could kind of try to figure out where the courts are going to go on that. But that's always a dicey game. The other ones that I think, just to kind of throw a couple of outliers to you, if you want, if you're Danny Longshots, Dan Andros, who comes on the show, we call him Danny Longshots because he likes to find these. A couple that would fall into this category for me are Indiana and Illinois. Illinois is maybe even a little bit more. Those are both at 7% to redistrict. Why would that be interesting? Well, you know, why are they so low, first of all? They're low because they have basically said, we're not going to do this. They've already gone down this road. And they said, we're not going to do this. We don't want to be part of this whole back and forth on redistricting. So that's why they're only at 7%. The reason why I think it's interesting is because of this new development, there's going to be new pressures coming on these states. And if Democrats go far enough, I think there's a real chance that Indiana says, wait a minute, we're going to reconsider and we're going to redistrict. Again, you're at 7%. So you're talking for every 7 cents you invest, you get a 93-cent return. Big time stuff, right? You're what, 13, 14 times your money? That's a big time return. It's a long shot. You'll probably lose it. But is there value there? I think there's a little bit of value there. I think there's a little more value in Illinois, honestly, because Illinois, you know, I think if Republicans go far on this, the state of Illinois, which is very liberal, very blue, will say, wait a minute. We're not going to let them do this. We need to fight back. We're going to redistrict now, even though we considered it earlier and said, no, we're going to rethink that. So those are two. If you want to get playful, I would go there. All right. Let me give you a couple of comments. You guys have so many great comments you've been dropping in the feeds on Substack. We really like when you do that. Predictableshow.com. Put comments, put questions in there. I've been in this world a long time. I've been dealing with prediction markets for a long time. And a lot of my friends haven't, and they are always asking me questions. They're like, oh, well, you know, what does this mean? You said this. I don't even understand that. If I'm getting, like, if I'm not explaining this stuff well enough, please let me know. Ask questions. Give me a chance to just come on here and answer them, because I would love to do that. It's fun for me. It's interesting to me, and I think it's really helpful to other people. If you're thinking, oh, gosh, I don't know anything. I feel like this is too advanced, or it's too far down this road. You're not alone. You're in the place that almost everyone is. This is the very early, congratulations, you're on the ground floor for something that's huge. You're there, you're early, you're the early Bitcoin person, you're the early NVIDIA investor, you're there early, you're there right now. So in understanding this stuff and helping me walk you through whatever I can is a real opportunity for me. I think it's great for everyone who's paying attention, reading and writing here, or reading and listening, watching. So ask questions. I would love that. Or just drop comments in. I would love to hear from you. Boy Mama says, I'm going to be honest. I didn't think I was going to care for this type of show. But boy, was I wrong. Oh, great. I was absolutely tuned in the entire time. I found it so interesting. I will be adding it to my daily podcast playlist. Please do that. Yes, I love that. Please go. Even if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're just on Substack and you're like, ah, gosh, do I go to the podcast feed? I'm already on. Just go there and follow the show. It helps the algorithms a lot. It helps other people understand this and uncover it. And honestly, it helps people like you and me get to these things earlier than some others. And that's an opportunity for us. So help other people discover this stuff so they know how to make their life a little bit better. Let's see. S. Rice writes, hopefully not Susan Rice. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe we've converted her. I'm not really a prediction market player, but maybe you will make me into one. I am a Chartomaniac, so I'm loving the Chartapalooza and loving this show. Yes, we did that a lot on Studios America, and we will have charts for you a lot. I will try to make them the opposite of completely dull and, you know, make your eyes bleed. So anyway, I don't know if I'm going to be able to achieve that. Most of the ladies that I tried to date in high school were not won over, frankly, by my Chartapalooza, but I will try. I will try for you. Let's see. Coop Daddy says, Stu, you have a calm, reasonable, no hyperbole delivery. You present in a calm manner that is truly appreciated by many, including me. I'm able to make more informed decisions based on your analytical approach. Thanks. Oh, that's awesome. That makes me feel really good. And honestly, it's what we try to do here. I've tried to do that for a long time. There's a lot of kind of everyone going crazy. I like to bring it back to a little bit more. I like life being calm. And this is something I try to implement in every part of my life. It's not always easy when I'm watching the Toronto Blue Jays blow a lead in the ninth inning, like the World Series. I don't know if you noticed they blew the World Series last year. That was hard. I wasn't very good. There was a lot of hyperbole. I may have wanted them to dissolve the franchise in the middle of that inning. That was not a good idea. I try to be more calm and rational here, so I'm glad you appreciate it. And finally, Lightbrand writes, we all need prediction market analysis involving Eric Swalwell. Yes. By the way, we gave you a great pick on that. If you happen to be listening to the live streams and the stuff we were doing as we were ramping up, we said, hey, Eric Swalwell is at 60% to win this election in California. He might win it, but man, 60% seems aggressive with a dolt like Eric Swalwell who is having sex with Chinese spies. It just seems like something could, a bubble might burst there. we went in on that market and were able to get some gains there as well. So hopefully you've been joining us through this. You see these. And by the way, the thing I want more than anything, I love your questions. I love your cool comments like that. The thing I want more than anything, I would love to hear about when you're coming up with a win. If you're coming up with a loss, I'd love to hear those stories. If you heard something on the show and you put a little money in and you paid for a dinner, please tell me about it. I would love to hear. If you put some money in and you lost and you thought, gosh, here's what I was thinking and this is why I was wrong and how I'll do better next time, or what did I do wrong? I would love to hear those. Drop those in the comments. Email us. I don't know what the email is, so don't email us yet. We should set up an email. Drop them in the comments, any platform. We're going to be looking for that. We're building a staff of people who are going to be able to catch all your comments, but I'm on there all the time. Like, I'm on the Substack thing all the time, and I'm always just, liking your posts, trying to respond to them when possible. I like interacting with you on this stuff, and I love talking about it. Kind of obsessed. If you can't tell, I blew up my very stable job to do this. So you can tell I'm dedicated. Okay, predictableshow.com is the place to go. Sign up. It's free. Email. You get lots of information for free there. Also, YouTube and of course, all the social media, Predictable Show. And if you're here for Sudo's America, you like this content, I love that you're staying here. Thank you so much. But also, go over and check out Stu and Dave Do America. Very funny show. Dave's freaking hilarious. He's incredibly gifted, and I love doing a show with him because he's really funny and really smart, and it's been great to do the show with him as well so far. So check that stuff out, and we will see you next week.